Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions with your hosts, TV Scouting MMA and
the MMA Guru, back after an electric, historic pay-per-view for Korean Zombie versus Dan 50K Ige, UFC on ESPN 25 or UFC Vegas 29. This card, man, it's here. It's got some good ones in there. It's got some exciting ones. Specifically jumping out for me, Marlon Chito Vera and Davey Grant. That's interesting. And for the old heads, Diego Lima and Matt Brown. Sounds like a Bellator fight, but I'm still excited to watch that one.
Yeah, and a couple others on the main card, Olenek and Spivak, and then Erosa and Choi. I mean, I think we really have a few exciting contests coming our way, even if, we don't quite have a title fight or anything like that. And, just real quick, I know you got the chance last week to travel out, go to UFC 263 in person live. I mean, Guru, what kind of experience was that? If you could just share with it.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. No, I mean, thanks for asking. It was really, really an incredible trip. The seats were fantastic, even though I'm like, quote unquote, in the nosebleeds or whatever. I mean, you could see the whole arena and you really saw what was happening. The atmosphere for any of you other regular sports fans that haven't been to a fight. It's like playoff hockey, playoff basketball. I think it's just another level. It's like, it's unlike anything I've ever really experienced before. The atmosphere is palpable. It's exciting. A ruckus crowd. I mean, it was a fantastic time seeing Izzy, Nate Diaz rock him in the minute. The crowd went wild. Brandon Moreno, I actually got to go to the ceremonial weigh-ins by chance, which was also really incredible. The crowd was absolutely roaring for Brandon Moreno. And after seeing Figueiredo have a bad weight cut and barely make weight, and then seeing Moreno walk out and the crowd again, like, I mean, just go crazy. Like, I've never seen. I mean, they booed Figueiredo like he was a Bond villain. I mean, he got booed hard, and it was just it really did. It seemed like it was Moreno's night, and it was.
Yeah, man, I'm definitely jealous of the experience. At some point I do wish to get out to my first one, but
we got to go. We're going to one. That's a fact. I'll have to drag you out of work or something to tell the boss you're kidnapped. But you're gonna come to one as soon as it's one closer to home again.
Hey, man. But yeah, let's get down to business because we got another big card here. Going to do our best to make it a more expedited version after we went a little long for the pay-per-view. That's all right. We hope you enjoyed.
It's all for the fans.
That's exactly it. And hey, we had a couple things, right? And let me tell you, I cashed out big on Izzy. So that definitely
Izzy by decision was huge. Izzy, yeah. My Izzy over 4 or 5 and decision was huge.
Yeah, so it definitely felt good to be in the win column last week. Definitely had a couple of the underdogs not pull it out, but to have, like, you know, one of your bigger plays go through, that definitely, and especially being, you know, favorite fighter and all that. So like I said, let's get on to this week. We have, to lead off the card, King Casey O'Neill versus Lara Procopio. And this is going to be actually a pretty interesting fight between two relatively inexperienced MMA fighters, but two women prospects that, yeah, I really think that the UFC is trying to push. And it's interesting that they're really meeting this early. And maybe the UFC isn't trying to push Lara Procopio as much as we think. However, I think that this could be a tough matchup for Casey O'Neill.
I mean, I actually agree the way you said it before. I think it's a push for both. I think Casey O'Neill, for very, very obvious reasons, brings a certain level of attention. And if Lara Procopio can beat her, then that's good for Lara because she can steal some of that clout, so to speak. And if Casey O'Neill beats actually a decent mixed martial artist in Lara Procopio, then why not let her steam train keep rolling?
I think they're both relatively young prospects. Actually, they're both very young prospects at 25 and 23. So I don't know, a loss at this stage, it doesn't really hurt either fighter. It just kind of builds the other one up.
Hmm.
So I actually do kind of understand that matchmaking in like a more, what's the word I'm looking for?
Meta?
Yes, beautiful. In a more of a meta sense, exactly.
Okay.
But that doesn't really help us handicap the fight. It's just kind of an interesting narrative.
Well, hey, I could definitely help you handicap the fight.
That's what we're here for, baby.
Yeah, so I definitely think that Procopio has the advantage in most everywhere besides the size department. She has the black belt, whereas O'Neill has a purple belt. And I trust Procopio working out of Nova União more than Casey O'Neill, who's kind of been around the block as far as gyms go, especially that her main affiliation is Tiger Muay Thai.
I mean, so, she's been pretty serious out of Extreme Couture.
Right. You're right.
But a lot of people come and go through there. They accept a lot of transients because it's Vegas.
Well, the way that I think it happened for her last time was that Thailand was closed due to quarantine, so she had to fight in Vegas. So since she was going to be there, I think you're right. It is very easy for people to stop and train at Extreme Couture.
I think they make it a pretty conducive environment for that.
Definitely. And now I think she has stuck there, it does seem.
So, I mean, Casey O'Neill's last fight for Shayna Dobson, Dobson, I believe, went on to retire after that loss because she's like has a master's degree and decides she doesn't want to keep fighting, which is good for her, right? But I believe, is that correct?
That's 100% correct. So where was her head at for that fight entirely?
Right. So that's an interesting point. And but she did look good. She had a good game plan, and she beat her the way that you're supposed to beat Dobson, by taking her down and ground and pound.
Yeah, I will say some of the things that concerned me in that fight were her defensive tendencies, and that she was very prone to getting hit by Shayna Dobson. So I know Procopio is a much more high volume fighter and defensively aware in the grappling as well. I don't think that she is necessarily a lead in on any level, but I do think that Procopio is going to be more experienced all around than O'Neill. And I think she's faced a little bit of a higher level of competition up until this point. So I do think taking the short favorite here for Procopio to open up the card at minus 158. I mean, this is someone that landed over 150 strikes in their debut and then followed that up with a very good performance against Molly McCann. So
yeah, that Carl Rosa fight was a good fight. And now that I actually kind of am remembering, you know, that through the studying, I actually kind of made me now I'm a little bit more bummed that Carl Rosa was pulled from the UFC 263 card last week. I kind of fluffed it off because I was just hoping that the whole card stay together. But that Carl Rosa fight with Lara Procopio was like a barn burner.
Yeah. One of the more entertaining fights to watch.
Yeah.
On tape,
like,
for
and
sure.
That's the fact that it's even sticking out in my memory. I should say something.
Yes.
And the way she beat up Molly McCann was pretty one-sided.
Yeah, I felt good being on her side on that.
So, taking the short favorite, I think, is fair. I really like Procopio by decision, plus 110. I think O'Neill, obviously she's undefeated, has never been finished. She has two amateur losses, but yeah, she's undefeated in her professional career. So I think even if she loses, which is very possible, I think she should tough it out and survive.
Yeah, I think that she'll be part of either a small two-leg parlay or maybe I'll play her straight up. But that it seems like Procopio will be my pick here.
Moving right along.
Yeah, let's get to the next fight, which I'm definitely not as ready to place a bet on myself. We have Joaquim Silva, 11-2, versus Ricky Glenn, 21-6-1. These guys actually have a lot of experience in the UFC, 6 fights apiece. But I don't feel comfortable given that their most recent fights are each at least 2 years ago. So I'm not jumping into place a bet on guys that could have had, you know, severe gains or losses, you know, maybe learned a little something while they were away. I'd like to see how they look coming back before I jump in, unless something like really stands out of weigh-ins. The size looks like it might be a thing. But do you have any thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you look at Ricky Glenn, who his last loss was to Kevin Aguilar, who has probably just sent his walking papers after losing his fourth fight in a row. I believe he missed weight for that fight. He did. He missed weight for that fight by 3 pounds, Ricky Glenn did. So for this fight, he's moving up in weight, which I think is a really good move for him at this stage in his career. Especially since I don't even think he's going to be the smaller guy in this fight against Joaquim Silva, who's honestly been in the UFC like a decent amount of time, was on the Ultimate Fighter Brazil, lost his last fight by knockout to Nazareth, which I guess is not too much shame in that. Jared Gordon fight was kind of back and forth, obviously. He ends up getting the finish. It's tough. I just feel like with both guys being out for so long, and you see Ricky Glenn with a little bit of a size advantage now coming up to a more natural weight, the only way I handicap this fight is dog or pass. And I'm not even saying you should bet money on it or that I feel super confident about it or anything like that. I gun to my head, if I had to place a bet, I think that's where I'm going at the moment.
Well, I definitely think you talked me into the Ricky Glenn side as far as making a pick. But yeah, I'm going to stay away from this one on a bet. So do you think it's fair to move along?
Sure.
Talk about a potential slop fest. We have our first heavyweight fight of the night. And this thing,
you ever play that game Hungry Hungry Hippos as a kid?
Dude, I was a smasher in that game, dude. I mean, if you weren't aggressive, you obviously had some like issues growing up. You obviously didn't want it bad enough. Anyways, so Josh Parisian versus Roky Martinez. And I mean, Roky Martinez, 5'10", Josh Parisian, 6'4". There's a 7-inch reach advantage for Parisian. And it's going to be difficult for Roky to really get inside here. But at the same time, I mean, I remember placing a nice bet on Downtail Maze. And I immediately regret that decision because Roky actually put on a bit of a fight, and not that he really made it that close, but he had like this one submission attempt that was like a little bit scary.
Oh, Downtail Maze.
Yeah.
Being really crap.
Yeah, and he was like, what, like minus 300 or something crazy? And like, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's the one, the parlay piece. Like, man, yeah, that definitely taught me a lot of things. But one thing it taught me here is that it explains why the line is so close this time, especially against an even lower level opponent from Downtail Maze, because I really don't think Josh Parisian is that impressive. The Ultimate Fighter, he gets called up and he fights Parker Porter and loses a decision to a guy that's smaller and has to get on the inside. And, you know, we could see Roky Martinez, you know, pull off something crazy here,
You'd like to think that after a terrible showing to Parker Porter, that like you come out with a fire in your belly, right?
You would hope so. Look at this. I mean, you look at the size advantage, like at weigh-ins, this realistically, I mean, this should be a hammer away spot just given like size, age, pedigree, whatever. But Parisian, like spinning back fists are like a heavy diet for him, I think.
Why wouldn't you bet the fight to go the distance?
Yes, I like that because, yeah, both guys have been the distance multiple times in their career as heavyweight. That's plus money. You might as well take a shot, right?
I don't know if it's my favorite play because, again,
no.
Either guy could just – it's heavyweight MMA. Either guy could buckle over at any second. And I don't trust either guy to, really will themselves through it. Like, Roky Martinez is not above – like phoning it in.
maybe that's not true.
I don't
think Roki necessarily.
He got choked out by Romanov. I mean,
by Romanov, you
right?
Know,
but Romanov's
in
good.
In round two,
right?
A guy like Rogério de Lima, he gets choked out with a forearm choke in round one. You know, at least Roki makes it to round two against Romanov. So. Listen, I'm not going to bet this fight. But if you ask me who I would pick, I'm saying
three times in the mirror, I'm not going to bet this fight. I'm not going to bet this fight. I'm probably going to bet this. I'm probably going to end up betting. Listen, you're sitting there with a little J-Mo, you know, watching. What's a little flyer? I'd probably take the flyer. I do like Parisian. Obvious. Oh, dude, come on, Parisian by decision. +310. Why? They don't.
God damn it! Am I gonna bet on this
fight? They don't know how to predict the fight. Parisian by KO is +210. They don't know how. They don't know what to do.
Oh, we talked about this last week. Like when the props are kind of priced highly, even when
they don't know
whatever.
How it's gonna go.
Yeah. Ooh, a +310.
Juicy.
Ooh. Damn it! Why do you have me in my feels now?
And the fact that they have Roki Martinez by decision at +340 shows you how mispriced that is. Roki Martinez has yet to win a fight in the UFC. What has he shown that would make us think that he could outland Parisian to a decision? That's insane. Roki Martinez isn't going to out-cardio anybody.
Well, yeah, I mean... The striking stats certainly line up that way. You know, I mean, it's so. Yeah,
I think it's. I think we have to hammer it. I think our
hammer it. Are you?
Yes.
Hammer.
Yes, because I think. Because I think we, while we're of course uncertain, I think we have a degree of uncertainty less than the bookmakers right now, and that's crazy. And again, even if we lose. Even if Roki Martinez pulls off a Hail Mary knockout in the first round, like I wouldn't really feel bad about that. Like it's just so crazy.
I'm gonna go back to not touching this one. All right, let's get to the next fight.
I'm putting the whole kit and caboodle on it.
No, see, I'll save it because this next fight, this is where I think it gets a little interesting.
Look at you, you're learning. Our little boy's grown up so fast.
So, Chaos Williams versus Matthew Semelsberger.
The Jedi. Semi the Jedi.
Yeah, dude.
So, Semi the Jedi is probably his name.
Probably.
Semi the Jedi. Fucking. I love Star Wars, so obviously I'm kidding, but that sounds stupid.
That's all right. But, hey, okay, so... Hype train, Chaos Williams comes in, and was he not like a slight favorite to Michel Pereira when he lost in December?
He was a slight favorite. And I believe we were on Pereira.
Oh, yeah, we were. So I really do think that Chaos has a lot easier matchup here. I think Semelsberger is a lot more straightforward in his striking approach. Last fight, I did have him by knockout against Witt, and that was largely due to Witt being unable to deal with someone who has straight punches and a little bit of pop. Chaos is not going to get knocked out here. His only two career losses have been by decision. I don't necessarily think that Semelsberger is going to be able to outland him consistently the same way that he has against like Carlton Minus. It's just those statistics I don't think really hold up once you add a bigger sample size against a higher level competition, because Chaos Williams, his real sample size in the UFC, he's 2-1, but he has two first round knockouts in the first minute against Al Hassan and Morono. So how much could you really draw from that? Really, we're looking at his loss against Pereira where he even outlanded him, but it was just a visual.
Yeah. This is kind of the one where I want to bet it because the fight is so exciting, but I don't know if I will because I may not have to because the fight is so exciting and it's close. It's a close fight. I expect Chaos Williams to have the speed advantage and possibly even the power advantage, but Semelsberger
can use his wrestling on some level. It's just kind of true. It's just the one wrench in the deck. Like, if Chaos keeps it standing completely the entire time, he could probably tee off on Semelsberger and even catch him like in the first round. But it's just, we've seen, at least right to start that fight, wasn't Chaos a bit tentative?
I agree with that.
To outland Paheya, who is like not strategic with his cardio and generally kind of easy to hit, right? Because he keeps his hands down low. I mean, he's hard to hit because he's quick and elusive, but easy to hit because he keeps his hands weird. Like, it's weird, right?
I think his last couple fights, Pereira's really coming.
He's gotten a lot better. He's gotten a lot better. Like, I'm really excited to see him fight again.
Right. So his use of feints and like his wacky style makes it really difficult to track him. And also, he packs such power. He landed some big kicks to the body. He really kicks like a mule. Even the kick that he tried to duel that was a mule kick. He's hilarious. But anyways, so Chaos Williams, he's not dealing with that type of striker in this fight. It's going to be much more straightforward, and I think the opportunity to counter is going to be there because Semelsberger is not afraid to just come forward. So a guy like Paredes that's setting up traps and feinting and stuff, and Chaos is trying to, you know, wait and counter on his own, like, that's very tough against a really high-level striker like Paredes. But, you know, we're looking at Semelsberger, a guy that's more willing to just come forward. And, yeah, he's got some pop, but I don't think a knockout is live for him here. Chaos really hasn't had trouble with the weight cuts. And he also, you know, like I said, he's been to decision for both of his losses. So I really trust, you know, maybe Chaos doesn't get a knockout here. You know, maybe you want to say, oh, Semelsberger, you know, he's young, got a fresh chin, but he's been knocked out himself before. Dude, so
I like, if you like the over though, why pick a side? Why not just take the over? Over 2.5 plus 112.
See, I think that's, I mean, both of Semelsberger's losses have come inside the distance. One knockout and one submission. And he is only 8-2. So it's not like we're talking about a super experienced guy. No. I think what I will do is take the first fight of the night where I felt pretty good and put that with this fight. Laura Procopio and Chaos Williams would be a fun, like, little parlay.
You really feel that confident in Chaos, though?
Yeah, I really think that he is a much better striker. He's very strong in the clinch, and he showed the ability to get out of control against Pereira and not really get controlled until the third round. I don't think Semelsberger really takes him down. I don't see him being as strong as Pereira or as good of a grappler. And I think that Chaos actually is a little bit underrated as a grappler, just given, you know, a little bit of his strength and ability to get up.
And it's interesting that you say all this, because it all sounds good. And if you had to ask me, right, which way I was taking the fight, I was not going to say it's dog or pass. That was not how I was going to cap this fight. So to hear you feel strongly on Chaos makes me feel stronger on Chaos as well. So I might be following you here.
All right. Well, yeah, like I said, this isn't going to be my biggest play of the night, but I do like a plus 164
I actually do feel good about Chaos, because you're right. He's going to rebound here versus Pereira, and his wins versus Carlton Minus, who's terrible, and Jason Witt, who is kind of terrible. it's not good enough. I mean, it's good, but it's not, I don't know if it'll be good enough to take down Chaos here, who just went 15 minutes with a beast in Paheya. So I think you're right.
So talking about a play I'm confident in, I think I have my dog of the day. But depending on how early you take this, it might flip based on how the current line movement's going. So let's waste no time. Kanako Murata coming in versus Vina Jandirova. This is going to be grappler's delight. Sometimes when you see like two grapplers, like you think, oh, you know, we might see like a striking fight. And I just don't think that that's what's going to happen here. We saw that last fight with John Jiroba versus Mackenzie Dern, but that's because both of them were high-level black belts. I think the difference here is that Kanako Murata is a high-level wrestler first and a BJJ purple belt second. Also, high-level judo practitioner, Asian Wrestling Championships. She started judo at 3 years old, so she's got her purple belt now. I think that Kanako Murata comes into the UFC. She takes on Ronda Marcos, a seasoned veteran, and just absolutely dominates her from pillar to post, control, takedowns. I don't really think like a finish was ever really in danger at any point, but it is very difficult to finish Ronda Marcos. And she does throw those illegal up kicks because she did have a couple in that fight against Murata as well, that like if they had landed square, we might have seen a stoppage too. Then against John Jiroba, I just don't see her as being able to get a knockout. And that's evidenced in her record. 13 submissions, 3 decisions. Both of her losses have come by decision. So never has a knockout happened in a John Jiroba fight. I do think her jiu-jitsu is good enough to keep her from being knocked out.
You really don't think Murata can get submitted?
I do think it's possible.
Her one loss is by submission.
I do think it's possible. However,
is her Muay Thai good enough to like keep the takedown standing? To keep the fight standing so like she doesn't get taken down?
Well, that's the thing is that I don't think that John Jiroba's...
Right, her wrestling, we know that her wrestling isn't good. That's why we faded her against Mackenzie Dern.
But, you said we, but I actually took her. Anywho, that was a learning experience. So what I learned and what is kind of consistently true for the most part is that wrestlers versus BJJ, you got to feel good about the wrestler. And especially that she is a purple belt, so it's not like she's not familiar with different positions. I think earlier in her career when she did get submitted, it had to do with a little bit of cardio and her just not being like fully developed. I really don't think she was fully developed at that point, and I do think that she made some strides in the grappling realm, and she was able to stay out of bad positions against Marcos. But I think a lot of this fight needs to be won on like cage control and that type of grappling as well, because that's a lot safer.
Looks like Jandarobi's going to be the bigger fighter here by 2 inches in reach and in height.
Yeah, but I don't think it's one of those like 5-inch taller where you're not able to get a takedown type of deal. I think it's one of those like, you know, closer to the hips, and I feel better about the wrestler being the smaller person. And I don't think that like John Jiroba has like a 5 or 6 inch reach where like you can't get wrist control because you can't reach around in a certain position. I don't know. Based off of what I saw from Murata on her regional tape and then from what I saw in her debut, I just feel really comfortable that they're pricing her as an underdog. So the other day, I was up very early for basketball purposes. And then I get back home, you know, I'm off. So I was like, you know what, like hanging out, looking at some bets. And yeah, so apparently I placed a bet on Kanako Murata at +125. And just later that night, she actually ended up going down to +108. So now, live, it still sits at +108, but I'm curious if that line starts to slide any further, because, I mean, it was just a real bitter taste in my mouth watching that John Jiroba, like, really doesn't offer anything in the stand-up, where, like, Murata, she has, like, some sort of game plan to get her to her wrestling and, like, can hold her own and doesn't have, like, huge power, but at least has, like, a little bit of sting on, like, the straight punches. Like, I just don't think that John Jiroba has anything besides like a looping overhand and just like some
Very raw still. Yeah. She's still very raw in the striking.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the ways her eyes are, you never know where she's looking. So it could be it could be very confusing. I guess you're pretty good at with the women's MMA. I'm kind of stuck. I want to see some weigh-ins just to see some face-offs. Catch a little, catch those vibes, see how I'm feeling. But yeah, I could see it. I liked, listen, we really liked Murata against Marcos, right?
Yeah, she was, like, a sizable was a big favorite, bat. Yeah. From what I remember. So, and in this fight, like, her, that's the thing for me is, like,
she was a minus 220 favorite.
Seeing her as a plus 125 and now plus 108, I still think that there's value there. And I think if she was a favorite, I would probably be reconsidering.
Yeah, I'm gonna take her plus 116 on FanDuel here.
Oh, so they're actually a little bit behind the movement from DraftKings because DraftKings had the better original line.
Go figure.
Not often you see that. Hey, FanDuel, if you ever want to sponsor us, go ahead and do that.
FanDuel, give it up.
And hey, if you guys like what you're listening to, why don't you like and subscribe? That would be
like
fun.
And subscribe. Send it to your friends. Do it up. Go follow us, Chronic Combat on Twitter. Chronic Combat Conversations on Instagram as well.
Yeah. So I think that kind of leaves us on similar sides. I feel I'm a little bit more entrenched. Obviously, I got $50 on it. So that's a pretty heavy underdog bet for me. Hopefully, it plays out well. Next up, a fight that I really want nothing to do with. And honestly, like, I'll introduce it here. But, like, if you got more to say, that's great. But Alexa Kammer, Nick Negumarianu, both guys very inexperienced in the UFC. Two fights for Kammer, one for Negumarianu. A loss to Safarbek Safarov, who is no longer employed by the UFC. That was back in 2019. How can I trust this guy? And then I think of Georges Danhoe, and I see Alexa Kammer is like a minus 2-something favorite, and I see Negumarianu is like a plus 200, and I'm like, oh my God, do I need to bet this guy? And I'm just not going to bet this fight. And I really, honestly, realistically, like, if you ask me for my pick, I'm just going to say it's Negumarianu because, like, crazy shit happens in the UFC, and I feel like everyone's going to be on camera here. But, yeah, that's about all I have for this one.
Likewise.
So let's move right along to a much more fun fight in my book. Once again, I think, like we talked about last time, Matt Brown fought once again against someone that had a little bit of experience. Diego Lima, 4-6 in his UFC career, but that pales in comparison to Matt Brown, 15-12. Matt Brown, his chin definitely not sticking with him. The longer we go here. 3 out of his last 4 losses have been by knockout. His last one that wasn't was to Carlos Condit, and that turned into a backyard dad barbecue brawl fest.
What you gonna do, huh? What you gonna do? I am Bat Dad.
I didn't hear no bell.
Oh, what? I'm sorry. I thought this was America.
But, yeah, I mean, like, listen, so this one, yeah, I think it'll be a lot more exciting. And so Matt Brown, he's still got some pop in his hands. Like, scouting Miguel Baeza a couple weeks ago, I saw Miguel Baeza get his mouthpiece knocked out, almost dropped, and, like, on the ropes there a little bit. And, you know, Matt Brown still has his power. And Diego Lima, his performance against Bilal Muhammad really made me nervous for him coming in against Matt Brown because he stands up against the cage, he gets walked down, and, like, those elbows are coming if that's where you're waiting. I mean, he landed him on a much fleeter foot opponent in Baeza, so I don't think it's out of the question that a guy with neck problems in Lima, you take the wrong type of elbow and you get, like, the whiplash from it, and, like, man, I hope he's 100% healthy because this guy, Matt Brown, I mean, he's still probably got some of the most power out there. So I think, like,
power is the last thing to go, which is why at heavyweight, where speed isn't as important, the heavyweights tend to fight much later into their careers. So Matt Brown, Matt the Immortal Brown, I should say, 40 years old. I mean, has been fighting forever. You know, made his debut on the Ultimate Fighter season 7. You know, I mean, he's just been around, man. He's a true warrior. He's had some of the most exciting fights in UFC history. I don't know. I'm not sure that Matt Brown's volume will be enough because, I mean, him and Bilal, Diego Lima, I should say, had a close-ish fight. I mean, Bilal was in control, but like he pushed the best out of Bilal. So I don't know why would Diego lose this fight? I mean, by getting knocked out? Maybe. Last time he got finished was by Chad Laprace. I don't even know who that is, in 2018. But
yeah, I mean, he does have 4 knockout losses. Jing Liang, Means, Gordon.
If you like that, this is the way to play that. Matt Brown by KO for some reason is +500.
Yeah. So.
That's kind of,
I mean, listen,
Otherwise I like the basic one. I like Diego Lima by decision +145, but I'm kind of boring. So
yeah, I mean, realistically, I should probably just not touch this one and, like, you know, just enjoy Matt Brown. But, yeah, you know, it might get best of me. I might have to put a little on that +500. That seems juicy, like we say. But yeah, I guess if I did have to pick a side, like, I get what you're saying about Lima. He probably is like the smart side to take, but I just get the feeling that something happens. Like, Brown back up against the wall, had a few losses in a row, looking to prove a point. I think he could pull off something.
You really like Matt Brown.
Here. I mean, like, listen, when I say I really, you know, like him, I would say, like, $5 on the prop. To win a fight.
But at the same time, are they, though? Miguel Baeza, Carlos Condit, Diego Lima. I mean, they still give Matt Brown names at 40. Like, they're not, it's still not a cakewalk here.
No. Yeah. That's definitely true. I mean, listen, I probably should just
Bilal,
not bet,
I mean,
this
didn't
one.
Finish. Bilal's not a finisher, but it's not like Bilal finished him.
Yeah, but come on. I mean, Bilal doesn't finish anyone. So, I mean, that's not the best.
No,
like,
he doesn't.
So I'm happy, like, Diego Lima got back in there. But, I mean, come on. Like, I really just.
Even Matt Brown by decision is +380. They don't think he's going to win the fight, which is not what the odds say. Look at that. Look at that. We talk about this all the time. He's a +144. That's like that's a slight underdog. That's decent. By KO, his most likely path, +500. They're actually saying by decision is his most likely path at +380. +380.
That is crazy. But, yeah.
Diego Lima by decision is +145. And then we know that Diego Lima is not getting a finish. So.
Yeah,
it's a weird fight.
I'm up in the air still on that one. I'm not. I guess the weigh-in will be important, but I still don't recommend going heavy on it.
And we just watched Diego Lima's brother, Douglas Lima, lose yet another fight. So I have no idea what's going on with them in their camp, how hard they're training. I'm sure they make a lot of money being coaches, owning gyms, the Lima name. They're getting older. I don't know what's going on with them. So. Yeah, probably a pass. Contender for fight of the night possibilities. So, yeah, very interesting.
True. Yeah, so a fight that to me isn't as interesting on paper is the next one. Wellington Turman versus not the Bruno Silva we've been betting on.
Yeah, not Bruno Silva. Not Bruno Bulldog
Silva. A different Bruno Silva, who actually fights out of the same gym as one of our other friends on this
Bruno
card.
Bruno Silva. As who?
Joaquim Silva. They're both out of Evolucion Thai.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
So I don't know if they're related. Both out of the same gym. Both named Silva. Both fighting on this UFC card, but, like, Silva has 16 knockouts, 3 decisions. He has 1 knockout loss, 5 submission loss, and 1 DQ loss. And Wellington Turman is a BJJ black belt, and he has a pretty nasty knockout loss and then 3 decision losses. And then Four knockout wins, seven submission wins. So if anything, it's Wellington determined by submission or Bruno Silva by knockout. Clap your hands, maybe bet both if they're like plus 300 each, and then call it a day. Like fuck it. I'm not. That's all off.
Why not fight to not go the distance?
What is that? Like minus 300?
Minus 172. All
right, yeah, I still just, nah, I'm not touching it. I'm done. Those are my thoughts. On to the next one, right?
Wait. What? This line is, wait. Oh. Wait, that's really weird. Under 2.5 is minus 132. I mean, that's not wrong, obviously. But for 2.5 minutes to shave off 40 cents of value is pretty valuable. Right?
Yeah, that is kind of weird. Still doesn't make me want to like rush to play it necessarily.
Minus 132? That's like, that's cheap.
Yeah, I just...
Especially if... I mean, you're right, though. These guys are... you can't bank on them to like, I don't know, actually close the door on one another.
Nah, and listen, there's...
Like, who's to say it wouldn't turn into like a high-paced sparring match or something? You know what I mean? Who's to say that they're actually going to go for broke?
I agree. And you know what? Like, I don't have confident picks on like a few of these fights, but for the next four, like, I think I have a play or a pick that I feel good about for each one. So why waste our time on this one, right? Let's keep on moving along on the main card here. The next fight, we have Julian Erosa versus Sungwoo Choi. And we probably, as you know, a conglomerate here on Chronic Combat, need to issue a dual apology.
Huge apology to Sungwoo Choi. Yeah, listen, he showed something that he never had before, had shown on tape before, which was offensive wrestling.
And defensive wrestling.
It was really, really incredible. Yeah, I mean, I thought I might have said that a slight breeze might take him down. And that was, I mean, it was, that's like an egregiously wrong call. That's like the scouting report on Tom Brady kind of wrong. Like, it was just not good. So I got to give my apologies to Sungwoo. Maybe not too much because I did lose my money betting Zalal. So it is what it is. But I might be on him here. I kind of lean with him. Erosa's a good fighter, but he is really unpredictable. He gets finished and he's kind of other than that crazy Landwehr fight. So I don't want to contradict myself, but like, I almost feel like he's a slow starter in some ways, at least from what we've seen out of him in the UFC anyway.
I think that he's very headstrong. He doesn't mind walking guys down and taking punishment to throw combinations, but that's also like tied into his downfall that like, he really doesn't have an elite chin and he's not like an elite athlete. And he is like kind of tall for the division and definitely like cuts a decent amount of weight. And listen, Choi is kind of in that same boat, but like he's a little bit younger and he's a little bit more cut. And like when you see Sungwoo Choi hop in there, I mean, that dude throws some laser sharp straight strikes right down the middle, classic Muay Thai. He's confident. He has the ability. Like I said before, his last fight with Zalal, if it stays standing, he's going to have the advantage there. And I feel the same way in this fight. Erosa, he actually might get put on the back foot on this one just due to the volume and overall ability of Choi. And I think that Erosa is not going to be able to get to the grappling exchanges that he wants. And I think he's going to be under pressure. I would say, you know, looking at, you know, just straight up money line, Choi at minus 146. Maybe you want to find a parlay piece here on the main card. Or, you know, if you want to say, you know, maybe we can find a little bit of a finish here.
This is the play.
Plus 340?
Knockout? No, I don't think it's a finish. Okay. I think it's another decision. Sungwoo Choi by decision. Sungwoo, in three of his last four fights, has gone to decision. And Erosa, while he's only gone to decision with Grant Dawson, I think it's kind of, I don't know. I just don't know that that Wu Choi is the finisher that
any of the other fighters that he's fought are Devontae Smith, huge finisher, Julio Arce, a forgotten about finisher because he can't get to the octagon. I mean, he finishes AJ Bryant, goes crazy with Sean Woodson, gets the finish, and, you know, crazy fight with late Nate Landwehr, who ran right into him, which you and I were opposite on that fight, and I got one on you, one of the few that I get over you, I believe. Because I was on Arosa.
Yeah, I believe that is correct. And I do see a lot of what you're saying there. That makes a lot of sense. What was the line again on decision?
For Wu Choi to win by decision is +200. Or if you like the other side, Arosa by decision is +280. And again, it's really weird because Arosa by KO is +700 and by submission is +600. They don't think he's getting a finish.
Yeah, well, you definitely see something there. I like what you're thinking, and it sounds like we're on the same page, right?
Yeah, I do lean Wu Choi. I want to see the weigh-ins. I want to see how they look standing next to each other. Rose is kind of like a long rangy guy. So just want to see all that.
All right. That's it. We made it. We did it. I went how many fights without a submission prop?
Oh,
so
it's time.
We did it. Okay.
Is it time for TB's greasy submission prop?
The submission player of the day.
We need some like music for that. I was also thinking some music for the dog of the day.
Oh, okay.
Like a bam chicka wham wham, like some sort of weird gimmicky radio.
How can we turn more people off to our podcast? Anywho, sub play of the day. All right, so we have Marlon Vera coming in versus Davy Grant. These guys faced each other in the past. A long, long time ago, back in 2016, I don't really think much comes into play from that fight in this fight. I think Marlon Vera Cheeto is now who he is. He can fight on the feet. He can fight on the ground. He's slick. He's comfortable. Never been finished. Davy Grant, his last few wins have come by finish. Jonathan Martinez, Martin Day, guys that have been finished before coming into that. Popov was a split decision. He did win the unanimous against Vera, but the thing that stands out on Davy Grant's record, how has he lost his fights? He's 11-4. How have all four of his losses come? By submission. And then you take a look over at the record of Marlon Chito Vera. Just how does he get the majority of his wins? He has 7 knockouts, 2 decisions, and I'm sorry, what's his overall record? 18-7-1. So that's 9. So you take some tough fights, Ultimate Fighter, you got to do some addition, subtraction, whatever. 10 submissions on his record, okay? So a guy that's won by submission 10 times.
What the
and a guy
fuck?
That, don't even ruin it. Don't ruin it. Don't you dare.
I won't ruin it. Oh, my God.
Someone just looked at what the line was.
You little greaseball.
Okay, so right now, live on the pod, we are going to place a bet together, folks. Okay? Because I had to see what the reaction was from the co-host here before we went
in.
Prop. Marlon Vera. By submission, +600 on FanDuel.
600 +600
on DraftKings is +340.
Wow!
Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is a.
You could even do Chito Vera submission or points +100. That's crazy.
Yeah, because I don't think a knockout is necessarily coming like in the highest probability.
They do.
I know they do, but I don't. You know, like.
That's crazy.
And that's okay, but okay, so.
I might just play that. I'm playing.
Points or submission?
I'm playing decision and points.
That's not.
Yeah, I mean submission. I just said decision and really points. Nice. Yes. That's it. I'm playing submission and points for sure. I'm gonna take a sprinkle with you, but I'm gonna put a I'm gonna put the submission. All right, this is what I'm gonna do. So I'm not deceiving anybody. I'm gonna put a little sprinkle on the submission plus 600, and then when Cheetah looks good at weigh-ins, I'm gonna put a decent something down on the points and submission.
All right, so there you go, folks. Our first live bet together. I'll throw $10 on that one, plus 600.
Yeah, I was thinking somewhere between 3 and 5.
So, like, the thing that stands out the most to me is that we're talking on FanDuel, it's plus 600, and on DraftKings and PointsBet, it's plus 340 and plus 380. There's some serious line value there, and, like, honestly, this is one of those points where it's like, is it worth it to put down a little bit extra just because of that opportunity? Like, how often is it that you see a prop that's like 300 points difference from another book, essentially?
Yeah, you're right. I put down the 5, so I'm down to take the stab.
Yeah, we're going in. So there you go. Marlon Vera, sub play of the day. You know I'm always good for one of those. And it's interesting, especially looking at what our next fight is. But I just don't think that Davy Grant is that high level of an opponent, given that he hasn't been fighting as consistently as Vera. And Vera gave Aldo a very good fight and made him into a grappler. If Davy Grant turns into a grappler, he leaves his arms in for arm bars, and Cheeto can get any type of submission. So simple enough to me. Do you feel any different? I know we just bet together, so that was pretty cool.
For this fight?
Yeah, any different feels, or like you like the kind of idea?
No, listen, Davy Grant, listen, I thought Davy Grant looked like shit on this scale in his last fight. It put me a little bit further on Martinez, and he came out there, right? That first round was close, yeah. No? Closer, close-ish? Yeah. And then the second round, he kind of took over?
I would agree. Yeah.
Right? So, and then he knocked him the fuck out. Mm. 2 knockout streak for this kid. So, they give him a tougher fight here. And if he wins this fight, you're going to see a number rank next to his name.
Mm.
But I don't know that he can do it.
Hmm.
I think this looks like this. Yeah, it just seems like. Yeah, just seems like a time to lose.
All right, so
he's not in danger of losing a contract or, you know, losing his job or anything. This is a no shame fight. You've no shame losing to Marlon Vera here. But you beat Marlon Vera. You're only getting tough fights after this. Marlon Vera just lost to Aldo.
Agreed.
So
call me an event.
Seriously,
time?
If Davy Grant wins this fight, you're gonna be seeing a lot more of him.
Mm. It's a pretty pressuring call.
I don't think he does.
I agree with that. In fact, Cheeto is going to be one of my more like confident like picks of the card. So we'll see if I add him into any type of like main card parlay, because, you know, I am very interested in a Choi piece. And then this next fight, we're seeing another favorite that I definitely have a little bit of interest in. So Alexei Oleinik. 59-14-1, what a crazy fucking record. And Sergey Spivak, 12-2. Tale of the tape, you know, 43-year-old versus a 26-year-old. Wily veteran, Olenek, 46 submissions on his record. Spivak's never been subbed before. His 2 losses have come by knockout and decision. I don't think that Olenek is going to be game for either of those methods. I think that if there's any way for Olenek to win this fight, it is plus 300 by submission. However, if I was going to tell you how I think this fight goes, I think it's kind of sketchy that the line is minus 140 for a knockout when, like, Olenek's only really been knocked out, like, mostly on the feet or, like, started on the feet for the knockout. Where, like, Spivak, I think he's an okay striker, but he's, like, solid in his volume with the jab and everything, and, like, he sets up his takedowns well, and, like, he really gets to, like, the ground and pound, and that's where, you know, he'll hunt for some submissions and stuff in between the ground and pound. But, like, yeah, I think, if anything, it would be interesting if you don't feel comfortable playing Spivak at a minus 225, which, like, I get that against Olenek. And if you want to play a plus 300 submission for Olenek, I get that. Spivak by points is plus 650. So if he's able to just wrestle and Olenek's able to survive bad positions and not get pounded out, essentially, a plus 650 could be interesting there.
He's getting pounded out. The only way he's winning is the way we all know, submission by his Ezekiel choke, that he would somehow catch it in. So that by plus 300, if you want to take a chance on the 43-year-old Alexei Olenek, go right ahead. But we've seen 2021 has not been kind to old vets.
Damien.
Unless your name is Santiago Ponzinibbio. What?
Said Damien. Damien Maya. We just talked about this last week.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, and even Ponzinibbio is not really like a quote-unquote old-timey vet. But, I mean, he's getting up there, but he looked great.
But we were talking about like our Robbie Lawlers, our Damien Mayas, Anthony Pettis. For better or worse.
Yeah. I mean, Anthony Pettis is what, like 33? That's
he was in the MMA, UFC scene, WEC, and all that for so long.
Anyway, we really mean JDS, Overeem.
Yes.
And now probably Olenek.
Yeah.
He's lost his last two. Spivak is going to come in here. He looked fantastic against Jared Vandera, who we know is actually not a bad fighter. He came out there and stole one versus Taffa. I mean, so he's not a great fighter, but he's UFC material.
Yes.
So, you know, we really liked Spivak versus Vandera. Like, that was a big play of ours. I believe that was the first fight of the night that night.
Yes, and we had a knockout at, like, big plus money hit. So that was nice.
Yeah, so, I agree. I just don't see it.
So you see the minus 140 knockout?
Olenek, there's no striking fear anymore from Olenek. He has the one right hand. You have to be a fucking mummy to walk into it. You have to be sitting down.
You have to be Fabricio Verdum to walk into it.
Yeah, it's just not gonna happen. And it's nearly 20 years age difference. It's 17 years age difference. What the fuck is that?
Yeah. Just take Spivak. That's really the moral.
It should be a minus 2,000.
Yeah, that'll be put him with Cheeto.
Just put him with Cheeto.
Take
a money line.
There you go. Him and Cheeto. If you want a nice main card parlay without having to sweat too much, plus 113, Cheeto and Spivak.
Or this is the what? Look at Spivak. Spivak, you can't get him plus money by KO, but you can get him plus money round one or round two. You get him plus money at round one, plus 170, plus 500 in round two if he somehow survives. And then let me check that round grouping prop I sometimes love. Same idea, but that's not bad either. Minus 115. I'd probably rather take the finish at minus 115 than the rounds one or two. But if you like him to finish in round one or two, you could simply put whatever, a bet on round one and round two. Like I said, plus 170, plus 500.
Yeah.
I do think that Spivak is pretty parlayable, though.
All right, awesome. So let's get to our main event. I totally agree. I just said let's parlay him with Cheeto for plus 113.
Right. Oh, with Cheeto. Ooh.
Right?
Why don't we just parlay him with Wellington Turman and Alexa Kammer? All right.
You need to chill out.
You need to calm down, Skeeter. We don't take kindly to those types around here.
Panda Bear.
This has been a very South Park heavy episode.
Yeah, that's all right. That we're having fun, right? So, main event of the evening time, right? We got
talk about a great time.
The Korean Zombie.
Chan Sung Jung, the Korean Zombie. 8 main events, I believe, like in a row or some
yes.
shit. Not in a row, but like 8. Is it in a
yes.
row? It's 8 or 8 in a row. He's a savage. First, Dan. 50 motherfucking K Ige with the 22-second ticket burner knockout versus Gavin Tucker. after a war versus Calvin Kattar, and he's probably stole that win versus Barbosa. But man, Ige's exciting, man, coming into camp. Like, what was it, like 2 days or something, or 2 weeks just after his newborn baby was born? So, you know, shout out him for really being determined and set on a mission here. 29 years old, man. He's primed and really ready for an explosion. This would be this is a huge crossroads, I think, for Korean Zombie. Whereas for 50K, this is just, you know, a really big chance to put himself on the map.
I agree with that. And, man, Zombie's been here before. Ige's been here before, main event.
Ige has had that main event chance now.
But I just think that the level of competition tied into just like recency bias and, you know, a little bit of Dana White contender series buildup versus a guy that had to take some time off, fought out of Korea last time due to not wanting to travel during COVID. Now Korean Zombie back with Fight Ready MMA and his main chief corner, Eddie Cha. I mean, I don't think that Zombie is in trouble in any scramble. I mean, I think as we saw against Ortega, like, Zombie's able to survive most any position if he does get taken down, even if he gets hurt. And I think it is very difficult to hurt Korean Zombie. Let's go back and look over his record, because I don't think it's necessarily fair.
I don't know about that, man. His fight IQ is one of the most questionable in the UFC.
Yes, but
I think one of the biggest things that...
How it happens. Let me just finish the point. It's the same
way every time. That's what makes it worse. Well, yes,
but I think you have to have a certain ability and a certain type of, like, unpredictable strike to be able to knock him out. So you need a spinning elbow. Dan Ige, he's never shown me that before. So am I that worried? Like, Brian Ortega was known to do some crazy strikes. Didn't we think the same thing about
Gavin Tucker, that he was strong and whatever, that it, you know, that,
never,
I don't know.
Well, the thing about,
he got flatlined.
Yeah, he got flatlined by a straight right. Now, Gavin Tucker was also giving up 5 inches of reach to Ige. And that's one of those classic punches where, like, Tucker came so far in because he needed to get in there with his reach. And when Ige makes contact with his nose, his arm isn't even fully extended. So he's getting, like, extreme full force of power because he has such a big reach advantage, and Tucker stepped too far into the pocket. And Tucker, let me be honest there, like, he got slept. But you're not sleeping Zombie with a straight right down the middle on a counter.
No, you're so right.
So, Zombie, if you want to hurt him and knock him down, or you want to knock him out, how's the way that we've seen it every time? The way that he lost, we're spinning, like, up elbow from Yair Rodriguez. His shoulder popped out of its socket in round 4 against Aldo, so just strike that one from the record. Roop, that wasn't a good one, but that was back in 2010, so I'm not too concerned. And Ortega got him with that spinning back elbow that we actually saw him practicing in the back room before he walked out for the fight. Ige, I hope he learned the spinning back elbow if he wants to finish here. For me, I see this either being, I'll be honest with you, I don't know that either guy finishes each other. I mean, Ige's never been finished before. Barbosa dropped him, but it, you know, if Barbosa can't put you away, it's going to be difficult for Zombie to do it as well. But yeah, I think it's Zombie by any which way, or Ige by decision would be, like, the two ways I say that this fight plays out. But I think that this is my underdog of the main card. I'm going to go. I'm very shocked that recency bias has it that Dan Ige is minus 120 and Korean Zombie, what is it, plus 102 here?
Wow.
So Ortega,
okay, that's
Ortega was a plus 200 against Korean Zombie.
I don't want to sound too square. I don't want to be that square. But seriously, if I can get, and I'll say it straight up, and maybe that is square.
if I could have gotten either guy at this fight at plus money, I think that that would have been the right way. But to really see KZ on this side,
the value is DraftKings.
That's definitely the wrong side. It's probably 55-45. Chan Sung Jung should win, and they have it 55-45. Ige should win, and that's a mistake. But that is the public recency bias right there.
So I just pulled a Kanako Murata. I just dropped a 50 on that live on the show with you.
That's crazy. I really want to see fucking zombie weigh in.
No, I like that doesn't.
At featherweight, I want to see them
what
weigh
do you
in.
Mean at featherweight? That's where zombie always fights. Like, why is that? Why am I worried?
It's just my point. No. It's just at featherweight when you're that skinny.
When is a guy from Fight Ready? That important. When is a guy from Fight Ready not look good on the scale recently? So.
He's not from Fight Ready.
Well, yeah, yes, he is. He had been training at Fight Ready.
How long did he train at Fight Ready?
He trained
at
Fight Ready for years.
Is it just for this camp?
He had trained at Fight Ready for years, and then last camp he stayed in Korea, and they had coaches sending him a game plan to Korea because he didn't want to leave for quarantine.
He's really been at Fight Ready?
Yeah, I'll get you the exact years. Give me 1 second to pull it up. But
how did I not know that?
How
did I not know him and Cejudo were like training?
Well,
how is
not
that possible.
See, they're not training partners because Eddie Cha is the main coach for Chan Sung Jung, and I think that there's a different like head coach for Cejudo. No, or am I wrong about that? Is it Cha for both of them?
I don't know. You're. I thought you're teaching me.
Well,
something.
Yeah. What I was teaching you is that Okay, so Korean Zombie used to be with MMA Lab, and then in 2019 he moved over to Fight Ready. So then that was his first fight since moving over to Fight Ready against Brian Ortega that he didn't train in Arizona. And I think that that really showed up when he ended up out there. He didn't look as smooth, and he really it looked like he had a lack of like high-level sparring partners.
Bro, this is funny. My dad, who doesn't really watch UFC, I made him watch the Ortega zombie fight for when Volkanovski was gonna fight him, and obviously that got moved, but he's watching the fight and he goes, did this guy throw the fight? He looks like he threw the fight. He looked, because he's like, what is he doing? He's not even striking. He just, because I didn't understand what he was doing either. It was the first round, he just kind of stares at Ortega the whole time, doesn't land or do anything, just follows him, doesn't cut off the cage, literally does nothing. Then he gets cracked in the second round towards the end of that, but was getting beat for most of the second round anyway. And then he admitted that he was literally did not remember anything else after that. So he was completely concussed for the third, fourth, and fifth rounds.
Yeah. I mean, so
really, yeah. A really horrible showing for Korean Zombie, who I took over Ortega, which like crushed my bankroll that night. So I have a really bad taste in my mouth with Zombie at the moment.
Also, we took Gavin Tucker against Dan Ige. Think about that in like a close line match.
You did? I don't remember that.
I know I did. So that's also what stood out to me was that like I took Zombie against Ortega. I don't think Zombie changed like who he was. I think he had a very bad outing. I took Tucker against Ige thinking volume, being able to match the grappling, a little more higher output. But that gets proven wrong in a matter of, you know, 10, 15, 20 seconds. So it's so simple to me to be like, you would imagine, like, say Zombie beats Ortega, we're not even getting this matchup, you know, at all. But Ige has been steadily moving up the ladder. He obviously deserves good opponents. I just think that this is a big step up.
Yeah, Whew, this is probably one of those that I'll decide like Sunday morning. One of those that I'll decide Saturday morning. Yeah, I really do lean Zombie at plus money, but that's really it. Because coming into this, I was leaning Ige, but the plus money really makes me want to take the jump. Mm. That's pretty much as simple as it is. Ige's hungry. Does the fight go the distance? They think it does. They think the fight goes the distance.
I mean, it very well could, but I could see.
I mean, they have the over set at 4.5 at -112, -112, but then you could get the fight to go the distance at +104.
Huh.
So, for an extra 2.5 minutes, I'll take plus money. You're right. I don't necessarily think either guy gets a knockout or a sub. I think they're both tough as shit. If Ortega didn't get the fucking KO, why would Ige?
I completely agree with that. And yeah, I mean, that just about sums it up for me. Should we give the good people that made it this far a little bit of a betting recap?
Yeah, give it for both of us, because we're kind of all in the same plays here.
Right from the start of the card, the one I felt good about right away, we had Lara Procopio. I was going to parlay with Chaos Williams, so that was one play on the undercard. Another underdog. For the undercard, we had Kanako Murata that I actually put a $50 play on earlier in the week at +125, now currently +108. Guru's right along with me on those. We like Sengwoo Choi by decision. We had +200, correct? Then Marlon Vera, we did our first live bet on the podcast at +600 for submission, followed by a possible parlay.
For your greasy sub play of the day.
The greasy sub play of the day. Then we had a little...
I should say TB's greasy sub play of the day. That's you. That's always
you,
baby.
We had a little parlay of Marlon Vera and Sergey Spivak, +113. And finally, to top it all off, the main card dog, the main event, Chan Sung Jung, Korean Zombie, +102 or +105 on DraftKings compared to FanDuel. So if you're looking for value on the zombie, that's where you should be headed. And if you're following us, we hope you're cashing your bets, because then we will be too.
Yeah, and by the way, for that main event, I don't know. If you really like either side, I think playing either guy at decision plus money is a smart play, truly. I really do think so. So, seriously, thank you all for tuning in to UFC Vegas 29, Zombie versus Ige. We'll see you next week for UFC Vegas 30, Gon versus Volkov, which should be crazy. That's a nuts one. So, like I said, thanks for tuning in to the Triple C podcast. You got your host, TB Scouting MMA. You can follow him on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. You've got me, the_MMA Guru. You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. You can follow our podcast at Chronic Combat Conversations on Instagram and at Chronic Combat on Twitter. Wherever you listen to podcasts, please subscribe, whether that be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. And don't forget about our YouTube channel, where you can like and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.